From AllSport.com and AllSport Magazine, I'm Kevin Turner, and this is the AllSport National Podcast. Well, it's the first really busy weekend of the national racing season, and to help me go over that weekend and all the various racing and highlights and drama that we had from it are two special guests. One was at Silverstone for the British GT, the second British GT round, Ed Hardy. Ed, welcome back to the AllSport Podcast. How are you doing?
Yeah, Kev, yeah, doing well. Just about recovered from the weekend, because Silverstone, in true 500 fashion, was just rollercoaster of emotions. Didn't know what was going to happen. So many twists and turns, but yeah, just about recovering and doing well.
And that was just you in the press room, right? So yeah, we'll get into that in a while. But also joining me is Group National Editor Stephen Licorice. Stephen, how are you doing? You've been obviously getting reports in from all over the country, I guess.
Yes, as you say, it was a busy weekend, lots going on. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to make it to Donington Park for the first round of the British Touring Car Championship and the support series there, which is particularly gutting, considering it was actually a rare example of a beautiful weekend of dry weather and some great racing. But as we're going to discuss on today's podcast.
Yeah, we've got quite a lot to cover, haven't we? So yeah, let's get into it. So let's start with you then, Ed, the British GT, second round of the British GT Championship. And it was a second win in the Silverstone 500 in 3 years for Darren Lee and Dan Harper in a BMW. But you wouldn't necessarily have made them favourites beforehand. So how did they win this rather crazy race? What happened?
Well, yeah, rather crazy as well, because before Verso, only Sandy Mitchell had won the race twice, so they've joined a very exclusive list of two-time winners of the race. And they even, Darren and Dan told me after the race that they weren't going to win it on pure pace. They knew they weren't going to win it. They qualified fifth. The McLaren of Marvin Kirchhoff and Morgan Tilbrook was just so fast, so they knew they needed to win it on strategy, and that's how they did it. There was a yellow flag turn safe car period at the end of the first hour. It's a 3 hour race, and a rather bold move from them, let's say, during that period is what won them the race, because with Silverstone 500 you've got to do 3 driver changes at least, a maximum driver stint time of 65 minutes in one go, 100 minutes altogether. And they pitted twice during that first yellow flag period, which sort of put them on like an off-sync strategy. And Darren said that's what they wanted to do, was just to run a different strategy to anyone else. And it was a bold move, but Darren's a very clever guy, let's say. Pretty sure he did a physics degree at uni. And yeah, very data-driven, and that's what won the race.
But it was close, wasn't it, at the end? He still, I mean, at the finish line, they were 0.58 seconds clear of the Charles Dawson Kian Lewis 2C's Mercedes, which, of course, actually takes maximum points, isn't it? So, championship-wise, they must be very happy. I don't suppose they were too worried to finish second.
No, I mean, it was sort of a reverse of what happened at Donington opening, because that 2C's Mercedes was leading, and then Sandy Mitchell in the bowl while Lamborghini was applying very late pressure. And in this situation, it was Lewis on Dan Harper. And I was thinking in the press room, like, it'd be a bit silly if he went to try and actually overtake Harper, even if it was for the technical win, because they were getting maximum points anyway, because the BMW is only a one-off entry, so it doesn't take any championship points. And yeah, 30-point lead now in the championship for that 2-season Mercedes. It's, yeah, only 2 races in, but it's looking quite ominous at the moment. Like, I was doing some research, and the last time a championship lead like that was overturned was a couple of years ago, when Dan and Darren themselves overturned a 28-point deficit to Johnny Adam and James Cottingham in the last 2 races of 23, which isn't 30 points, so it's quite a good gap they've established themselves.
Still a long way to go, though, isn't there? And there's all twists and turns in British GTs. Actually, Stephen, I'll come to you for a moment, because obviously you've covered Kian Lewis in his previous championships. He knows sort of how to run a campaign, doesn't he? So I imagine you'd have been in that, every racing driver, of course, wants to win, but there's got to be a thought in his back of his mind, it's not worth taking a big lunge, is it?
Especially so early on in the season. I mean, it's a bit of a cliche, but you can't win the championship early on, but you can certainly lose it, and that's a huge risk if he was going to make a move on Dan Harper, who on the opposite side of that didn't have anything to lose, was just a guest entrant, and therefore wouldn't be determined to finish at all costs. Would be more determined to finish at all costs. So that could have created an interesting situation if Jewis had gone for a move. But Jewis, like you say, knows what it takes to win a title. He's done it in single-seaters and in sports cars in the past. And he's really looking very strong in that two-seat Mercedes at the moment. But as you say, British GT, we've seen it time and time again, how unpredictable it can be, how quickly things can change. And given there are such a high number of points available, 37.5 for the longer races, that 30-point lead, it sounds big, but it can very easily be whittled down. So it's ominous, but it's far from over.
Yeah, especially because it's worth considering that Mercedes was far from the quickest at Silverstone as well. It qualified seventh, but again, that was another car to just take care of strategy. And it was basically a race of survival. There were so many penalties, needless penalties, big penalties, which put a lot of cars out of running, whereas although the two finishers, the top two also had the small penalties of themselves, they were just ones to just survive and have a good strategy to finish up there, because the Mercedes, after winning Donington from pole in quite dominant fashion, it had 30 kg of ballast added to it because it exceeded expectation of a Silverham driver pairing. And you could kind of tell that the car had extra weight in qualifying. So it's, yeah, not a foregone conclusion that they're going to win, because if you were to ask me, is that the quickest car on the grid right now, I'd be debating if it actually is or not. So, yeah.
It'll vary from track to track anyway, won't it, given the nature of the different circuits and the cars. But, and also second in the championship, they did finish third, didn't they, Tilbrook and Kirchhoffer. So, were they, given they started on pole, were they disappointed? Or given that it was a crazy race, did they think, well, third place, keep the points ticking over?
No. I spoke to their team boss, Sean Gough, afterwards, and they were very disappointed. They had the pace to win. They could have won, except it was for him. A very strange thing that sort of cost that McLaren is, so basically, at the end, there was a third safety car period, and the cars that pitted earlier during it to top two sort of benefited from doing so, because towards the end of the yellow flag, when more cars pitted, including that McLaren, the pit exit was incorrectly closed, had a red light, which held various cars up for approximately 20 seconds. And that's basically what cost that McLaren a chance of fighting it for the win, because unfairly they were kept behind in the pit lane amongst many others. And so they were, yeah, very disappointed in that win.
Am I right in saying the Blackthorn Aston Martin of Johnny Adam and Giacomo Petrobelli was one of those cars as well?
Yeah.
So obviously, Johnny, we had on the podcast a few weeks ago. We're bigging him up for that win. That 20th
win.
He'll come, yeah. Come on, Johnny, we can see that there. But yeah, they finished fourth, but they were affected by that as well, weren't they?
Yeah, they were affected by that, but they were also affected by very unlucky. Their first pit stop was made about a minute before the first four-course yellow flag came out. So the poor timing there to make a first driver change, which just put them on the back foot, really. And it was just a great recovery drive in the end from outside of the points to fourth for that Blackthorn Aston. But I'm sure Johnny will get that 20th win eventually.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Well, let's look at one of the teams that's been doing a lot of winning. I know your mate, Sandy Mitchell, wasn't there this weekend because Alex Martin was sharing with Patrick Kujala, wasn't he? But Rob Collard returned, reigning champion. He was sharing with Hugo Cook, but they only finished sixth and seventh. And Barwell, usually pretty good at playing the strategy, aren't they? They're a very slick operation. So how did that they end up down in sixth and seventh?
Yeah, that was a bit of a strange run, because Barwell, they had good pace. They could have been up there. But again, like I said before, various cars got penalties, which sort of cost them, and that was a case for Barwell. For that number one car, Rob Collard was excellent on his return, by the way, in his first stint, climbed from 7th to 4th and had great pace, but then he made a little driver error of lapping GT4 car under yellow flag conditions, which cost that car a penalty. And then the 78 car, that had two penalties, the Alex Martin one. One was for too quick of a pit stop, which cost a 1 second stop go. And the other one was a pit stop procedure, where basically the Alex Martin car was just Mark Lemmer told me it was sort of half a wheel over the pit box, which in the end, very small margins, what cost a penalty. And so that's sort of what happened to Barwell, really, that those little penalties just cost them finishing high up. But they still had the pace, still expect them to be strong for the rest of the year. It was just, yeah, a tough setback for that team with the penalties, but I'm sure they'll rebound very well at Alton Park.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just going to say the next round will be at Alton Park on the 25th and 26th of May. But yeah, we should also, of course, talk about GT4, which a little bit now, I seem to recall that we talked about the Miki Racing Lotus being a bit unfortunate in the first round. And it seems to have happened again because you're looking at the results, their two cars didn't finish, but they had good speed again, didn't they?
That's been the quickest team this year in GT4, but they've not got a race win yet, because Donington got pole provisionally, but then disqualified Parc Fermé breach, and then at Silverstone, the Aiden Neat car with Josh Miller in there as well, that was dominating from pole. That was also on a bit of an off-sync strategy, and it was leading by quite some margin, but then suddenly technical failure, a wheel nut on the left rear sort of came off, and then just went off track, crashed out, just no, through no fault of the driver's own or anything like that, just mechanical failure that
was it a finger trouble mechanic in the pits, or was it an actual sort of part failure, do you know?
Yeah, so if you see the footage, it was the wheel literally came off and the rear bodywork was damaged as well, so it must have been a combination of things of the wheel nut coming off, suspension failure. Yeah, it was quite unfortunate for the Lotus, let's just say. The car was damaged beyond repair and just, spun out.
Yeah, I'm sure their luck will change soon. But of course, that did mean that GT4 was also won by a BMW, just the same as the overall race was.
Yeah. The central BMW, Charlie Robertson and Ravi Ramnid, who, before the season, I said, if anyone's going to beat the Jack Brown, Optimum McLaren, it's going to be this car here. Yeah, that one just inherited the win, basically, after the Lotus crashed out. It finished a lap ahead of the rest of the field. So basically, when the Mahiki crashed out, as long as that BMW just kept it in the white lines, did nothing stupid, it was just going to take the race win. And now, after finishing second at Donington, that puts them level with the Jack Brown Optimum McLaren at the top, the Optimum finishing second at Silverstone, so looking quite nice.
Yeah, that's sort of bubbling up nicely, isn't it? The Mark Warren, Jack Brown car being second and BMW third as well. So Century 1-3 there. Mm. Well, let's have a look at what else was happening at Silverstone. Stephen, we obviously talked about it beforehand, but GB3 kicked off as well. But there were, the health of British single-seater racing was really on display this weekend, wasn't it?
Yes, because we had the three main single-seater championships in the UK all in action at the weekend. We had GB3 and GB4 at Silverstone, and then had British F4 at Donington Park. And across those three championships, there were 70 drivers in action. And I don't quite know when the last time we'd have had 70 drivers racing in a top-level single-seater championship in the UK at the same time was. It's really, really encouraging to see in the difficult financial climate just how popular these championships are. New cars in GB3 and GB4 have clearly attracted some good drivers and good teams. And it's just really, really encouraging to see such a healthy, buoyant market place, and the fact that there's multiple drivers being capable of fighting at the front, it bodes very well for what should be a really good season. And the question now is whether that can be maintained sort of moving forward and ensure this isn't just a sort of one-off season where all three championships are doing so well.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you're saying there are lots of performance, but I'm going to throw this back to Ed because he was there, because you messaged me, of course, during the weekend as well. So there was one standout performance, wasn't there, in GB3. Freddie Slater's not even doing the full season. He's had a cameo in Formula 3 already. He was actually doing Formula Regional European. But he rocked up and he was very impressive, wasn't he?
Yeah, every time obviously it's not my championship, so it's not my main focus at Silverstone, but every time I looked up on the screen, Freddie Slater was just so far down the road, almost in a different league compared to the rest. And to say he's only 16-year-old competing against there's some 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds in that grid. So to do what he did over the weekend was just mightily impressive, and sort of he's delivering on the promise of being potentially this country's next big single-seater star, because he was just so impressive on debut in GB3.
Yeah, you're familiar with him from, I mean, Freddie's already, as he said, despite the fact that he's, you know, just barely old enough to race, it seems. He's won Ginetta Junior, he's won Italian F4. He's already been a finalist in our Young Driver Award. And he was on pole by over half a second.
Yeah.
Won two races and was coming through, wasn't he, in the third one, but for a clash, so.
Yeah, and it was, like you're saying, he's on pole by half a second, whereas half a second then covered the next seven cars around the GP circuit. So obviously the margins are... that's a much longer lap than many of the other circuits that they visit. But still, it's a really, really impressive performance by him. We've seen him, as you say, in a number of different categories, just how good he is. And for a piece that will appear in Autosport magazine shortly, I was speaking to his team boss from his Ginetta Junior days recently, and they were saying one of the things that's most impressive about him is the fact that the driving... the car takes up just such a small percentage of his brain power. He's got so much ability to focus on everything else that's going on around him, and that makes the ultimate difference. That he can, if there's any change in conditions, anything unexpected, he's got that spare capacity to deal with it so much better than anyone else has. And we've seen that time and time again in the last few years. And it's for the rest of the GB3 grid, they're probably quite glad that he's not doing the whole season, as it gives them a chance at getting some success at the rounds where he will be competing in Freca.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he struck me when he was a finalist last year with the Silverstone Autosport BRDC Young Driver of the Year Award. We've described him as the next Lando Norris, but actually he almost strikes as more like George Russell in terms of the amount of maturity, and he just, yeah, he's 16 going on, you know, 24 or something like that. So we'll be looking out for him in his Formula Regional campaign as well. But of course that meant, Stephen, that you kind of almost discount him, although he's leading the championship, he's, you know...
Yes.
Unless he's going to sort of bring a Concorde out of retirement or something to get backwards and forwards to all the races. So who actually are we looking at is fighting for the championship then at the minute?
Well, that's the intriguing thing. That besides him, a lot of the drivers had a messy final race of the weekend in the reverse grid race. So that sort of muddied the picture a little bit. But Noah Lyle is the highest placed driver behind Freddie Slater at the moment. And he was he's been there or thereabouts in various championships that he's competed in the past. He did British F4 a couple of years ago. So he perhaps wasn't a driver we were necessarily expecting to be up at the front compared to some of the other perhaps more established drivers in the series. But he had a very, very solid opening weekend. And somebody else who had a solid opening weekend was Abbey Pulling. I know we mentioned her on the preview podcast, and she got two very solid top six results in the first two races and could have potentially have even been higher up than that. And I think that was a really encouraging start from her, having finally progressed from an F4 level championship into a series with a car that's much faster, much more downforce, and is a very different beast to what she has been used to in the past. But the one driver that we expected to be up at the front who wasn't was Deegan Fairclough, who had a bit of a weekend to forget with various track limits, penalties. He wasn't showing the pace in the car. That they actually changed the survival cell of the car overnight on the Saturday night. We got special dispensation from the championship to do so. And he did make a bit more progress on the Sunday. He climbed up to seventh in the final race of the weekend. And it's one of those weekends that he's just got to put that behind him and almost see the rest of the year as a bit of a reset. Forget about that one. Move on. And we will see if he can get his championship bid back on track. But I guess the good thing is some of the other drivers were taking points off of each other. So although he didn't have a good weekend, because Slater was so dominant in the first two races, the the point situation isn't as bad as it could have been for Fairclough at Silverstone.
Yeah, we couldn't even really point to Hi-Tech not getting on top of the new car either, because his team, you know, Nikita Johnson's up there.
Yes.
In top three of the championship. So, yeah, strange one, because it's at the same venue that he went toe-to-toe with Freddie Slater in even more powerful single-seater equipment at the end of last year and came out narrowly on top. So, yeah, hopefully Devon Fairclough will have a better run, run out of the next one. But also at Silverstone, which is the old GB3 cars, but now in GB4. So how did that go? That grid, as we said in the previews, it improved remarkably, hasn't it?
Yes, it's really both in quality and quantity. It's really stepped up a level this year. And while we're saying Slater dominated the opening weekend of GB3, in GB4, the points after the first two weekends, they've had races at Donington and Silverstone now, it's incredibly close. You've got all three elite motorsport drivers, so that's Isaac Phelps, Alex Katulis and Ari Bansal, all on the 122 points, which is incredible to have three drivers from the same team on exactly the same number of points. And you've also got Dan Ginchard, who's just 2 points ahead of them in for Hill Speed. So Hill Speed are doing very well at the start of the single-seated season at the moment. So that's really interestingly poised at the moment, given that you've got four drivers separated by just 2 points. I think we could be in for a really, really good season in GB4.
Did you manage to sort of have a look at any of the other support races while you were at Silverstone, or were you too busy scurrying up and down the British GT paddock?
Mainly that, but no, you always catch glimpses. Janetta's always fun. You never know what you're going to get with that one. But I think, yeah, outside of British GT, the star was just Freddie Slater. I don't think it can be understated just how impressive he was at Silverstone. And just the promise that he's got as a driver is insane. So that was the main one that I caught glimpses of outside of British GT. So it's a very good grid on that GB3 field this year. You know, Freddie Slater, Nikita Johnson, Abbie Pullen, Devon Fairclough, some good names there. And so it's looking a very promising championship this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to follow up on the Slater thing there, former regional European gets going at Misano on the 3rd or 4th of May. Seems a long time before that championship gets going. Well, I suppose it's actually not that far away, as it's this weekend. So we'll have to keep an eye out for that. Well, Stephen, Ed just mentioned there, Ginetta yes. Jr. We've got to cover that off as well, because that also had an impressive
very impressive, considering that's got a huge grid and we know how unpredictable the racing can be there. But Rocco Coronel won all three races at Silverstone. He's one of the two Red Bull Junior drivers on the grid, and he's had a very, very good start to the season, considering when he made his car racing debut in the winter series at the end of last year. He was very sort of green at that point, hadn't really done many days testing the car. Now he looks really, really strong, and I think you have to say he's going to be tough to beat if he can keep up that sort of form. But as we know, in Ginetta Junior, anything's possible, so it's still really, really early days in the championship.
Yeah, I'm trying to resist the obvious joke of saying he might not be able to carry on the season because he'll be called up to drive a Formula One car for Liverpool. But as they work their way through their list, but no, that's a very impressive start, isn't it? 5 wins from 6 races, but second in the championship is Freddie's brother Alfie as well. So
yes.
not bad going, is it so far?
Yeah, definitely. And both of those are part of the R Racing team, as is Scott Lindblom, the other Red Bull Junior, and they're all up at the front, up in the mix. But it's also worth noting how well the scholarship driver Fred Green is doing this year. He's had a really good start to the season. Sometimes drivers coming through the scholarship aren't always the best funded, then they're not always immediately on the pace, but he's been really, really impressive right from the start of the year. So, and he's only going to get better as the season wears on.
Yeah, well, again, we'll keep an eye on that. I mean, I think a lot of people who remember when it was on the Toker package always have a look at Janetta Jr. And it's kind of after that little blip that we thought, oh, is it going to be okay? And obviously Freddie dominating it when he was doing it. Like, oh, is it falling away? But it seems back with a bang, doesn't it? So we'll be looking out for that. Now, I guess a more surprising points leader from the weekend, if we move back to Donington Park, would be the Porsche Carrera Cupman Angus Whiteside. So that's a little bit surprising, isn't it?
Yes. When we previewed the season on the previous podcast, we talked about how George Gamble was coming back to try and defend his title. Will Martin was one of his close rivals from last year, determined to try and win it this year. Andrew Ratstraw had some success in single-seaters. And then there's also the likes of Porsche Junior James Wallace. We didn't really mention Angus Whiteside. He was stepping up.
How could you, Stephen?
I know.
What
that was a massive oversight on my behalf. So Angus Whiteside won the Pro-Am Championship last year, but he showed signs of how good he was by winning races outright as well, beating some of the pro drivers. And he stepped up to the pro class this year, continuing with the Century Motorsport team. And he's emerged as the points leader after the first round purely because he stayed out of trouble. All the others had incidents or problems. You had the likes of Gamble had some track limits problems. Martin won the first race and then took out Sid Smith at the start of the second. So not only did he not finish that race, but he also has got a load of points on his championship points deducted from his total as well. So whereas they were having problems, Whiteside nearly beat Ratstraw to the race 2 win, had to settle for second, but he's across those two races, he's got the points to be the early leader. And what a confidence boost that is for his start to the season. And now all the emphasis is on the others to try and prove why we were talking about them ahead of the start of the season and not necessarily Whiteside.
Yeah, everyone else needs to get their act together and save the All Sport preview for that one. Yeah. Otherwise, rather silly. But we talked earlier about over 70 drivers in single seaters in the UK at the weekend. I guess the other championship on the Donington bill, British F4, your usual stomping ground. So what have you managed to learn from afar over the weekend?
That it's going to be just as close as we thought it was going to be. There are seven different drivers are on the podium, three different race winners, multiple different teams up in the mix. But one of the drivers that did win a race and could have won two races actually had a track limits penalty, bit of a recurring theme from the Donington opener, was Audrys Raber. And we didn't mention him as part of our preview. We said that there's going to be no end of drivers in the mix, potentially as many as 15. We didn't specifically mention him because his maiden season in the series last year was not a standout performance, really. He had a couple of top tens and that was it. But he was right on it from the start of the Donington weekend, won the first race, could easily have won the third race of the weekend as well. So he has shown that he's definitely going to be one we'd have to keep an eye on, the Argenti racer. And then Chase Fernandez, who was one of the front runners in Janetta Jr. last year, he scored the first win for the XL Motorsport team that joined the series last year. And then it was Jimmy Pezzit back in the series after a year in Australia that won the other race after Raber's penalty. So they're all in the mix, but it's actually a Fiesta Junior graduate. We talked before about how Fiesta Junior suddenly seems to be developing some single-seater stars in recent years. And it's Tommy Harfield who's at the head of the standings very narrowly at the moment after a really impressive, consistent first weekend, profiting from some of those track limits penalties that we mentioned in the final race. But I think that's going to be a leaderboard that changes a lot weekend to weekend as we progress through the season, because there's just so many good drivers there that could be capable of winning races, and the start of the season has suggested that's going to remain the case for the rest of the year.
You'll have to keep a tally to see how close to the 15 that we can get in terms of the winners. But there weren't very many winners in the mini challenge, where sort of a little bit of history was made. Can we say that?
Yes, yeah. Because one of the drivers we did pick out in the preview is Jamie Osborne in one of the Napa Racing minis. So it was a good weekend for Napa, alongside Ash Sutton's two wins in touring cars. Osborne won all three mini races, which included the reverse grid race that he came through from ninth. So that's a really impressive performance, and what a claim. He's really sort of staked his claim to take over from Dan Zelos and be the championship pace setter, really. And it was the first time that a driver has won all three mini races in a weekend since 2018, and that shows just how incredible an achievement that is from Osborne, and how the others are really going to have to up their game to keep him on his toes this year. Tom Ovenden was one of the closest ones. He was actually quicker in qualifying and just dropped back a little bit in the race. So we can see if he can fight back next time out. But certainly a great start from Osborne.
Yeah, it's a real statement of intent, isn't it? In a competitive challenge, to be out and go out and do that. But a couple of names that you did pick out in your Porsche Sprint Challenge preview did the business. They were on top.
Yes, Toby Trice scored two wins among the Caymans. So he's looking like after a really tough season last year, as he was recovering from an accident the year before, he's looking like he's really going to be one to watch this year. And Tom Bradshaw is a fairly late entrant to the series this year. He was one of the front runners last year, just fell away a little bit at the end of the season, so wasn't quite in the title hunt right at the end. But he's been very quick in a number of different series over the years. We've seen him in various championships, and he's going to be tough to beat. The pair had a really good battle, particularly in race two, but Bradshaw was got caught up in an incident at Redgate at the start of the third race, so that's cost him a little bit in terms of points, but it's early days in the series. So, but the battle between them could be quite a good one to watch through the course of the year.
A possible candidate for our top 10 club rivalries at the end of the season,
definitely.
Which might be getting ahead of ourselves. But I mean, that pretty much wraps up the sort of Donington Park Toker supports, I guess. If you wanted to hear about the British Touring Car Championship races, we had the pleasure of having Dan Camish as our special guest on the All Sport Racing podcast. So take a look at that if you want to hear from probably the man that had the most up and down weekend. It was quite interesting. Interesting to hear what you had to say about the tyre failure and all that sort of thing that you had after taking pole position. So head over to the All Sport Racing channel if you want to hear from Dan Camish about the Donington Park weekend. But it wasn't just what I'd call the sort of national top end professional stuff. I don't mean that in any disrespect to the club racing. So there's plenty of club racing as well. And I guess perhaps a better supported historic sports car club meeting at Snetterton than they've maybe had in recent years.
Certainly, particularly on the Formula Ford side of things, historic Formula Ford was really strong. Round about the 30 car mark for the opening round, which is much stronger than it's been the last couple of years. And it was Ben Sims that was the driver to beat in that. And also another championship that got underway at the weekend was British Hill Climb Championship at Prescott, and that had a really close start to the season. It was just a hundredth between Will Hall and his rivals in the first runoff, but then reigning champion Matt Ryder laid a bit of a marker down in the second one, was much more comfortably ahead despite battling gearbox problems all weekend. So it was considering the challenges that he had, it was a really, really solid weekend from Ryder. But you had all the established front runners were up there or thereabouts. So it was a good start to the season. And again, that should be another really close championship this year.
Quite ominous though, isn't it, if he's done that with a bit of a problem?
Yes. The others know that they're going to have to really be on their A game to beat him this year. But he showed last year what he's capable of, and we can see if he can do that again this season.
Well, that was some of the sort of highlights and stars from last weekend. What have we got? What have we got coming up this weekend, Stephen, of note?
This weekend, the big event is a big 3-day event at Donington Park for the Donington Historic Festival. A whole mix of different categories in action there. Some single seaters this time, as well as GTs and tin tops of from various eras, and it's back to being a three-day event. It's been quite a few years since that event has been held over 3 days, so I'm really looking forward to that one. And there's also the small matter of one of our 24-hour races this weekend, the Citroën C1 24 hours at Silverstone, at which, among the supports, we've got British F4 back out for their second race, so that not much of a break for those guys. They're back on the Grand Prix circuit, taking advantage of an opportunity to race on there. And also in action at that event is the Brit Car Endurance Championship, which is actually teaming up with the Dutch Supercar Challenge for this weekend. So some of the Dutch competitors will be heading over. So that should be a really big 50-car plus grid.
What can possibly go wrong?
So, I think that Silverstone meeting should be quite an interesting one, I reckon.
Yeah, well, there you go. You heard it here. go and take a look at Silverstone and see how that smorgasbord of machinery yes. Comes together. But before we go, Ed, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. Ulm Park, British GT next out. Any predictions? I mean, they've moved it back later in the calendar, partly because it can be a bit of a crash fest. And one of the arguments is, I guess, better weather and the amateur drivers, let's be honest, more up to speed with their kit. So hoping for a cleaner weekend across the 24th and 26th of May.
Yeah, all good said in theory. I mean, it'd be quite funny, actually. We've had two dry weekends to start the season, which last year, our first dry weekend was of the season for Nartley. So it'd be quite fitting if Orton Park is the first wet race of the year, despite it being...
I'm not sure fitting is the word.
Ironic, perhaps.
Quite ironic that it'd be the first wet race. But no, end of May, that one. May bank holiday weekend. So the race is on Monday. I think Barwell's one to look at for that one, because they've got no success penalties for the first race, because when you finish top three of the previous race, you have to spend more time in pit lane. So Barwell and Sandy Mitchell back in the 78 car. So I think that's one that needs to be looked at.
Yeah, they did. They did win both races last year, didn't they? Took a win
each, those cars.
Yeah, quite harsh to call it a race when there's about 10 minutes of green flag.
Well, I mean, that's the point, isn't it? Let's hope that we get more. I mean, Alton Park's a great track, but I imagine it does feel quite tight and narrow in a GT3 car with over 500 brake horsepower. So, yeah, fingers crossed for that. Well, thank you very much to Ed Hardy. Thank you very much, Stephen Licorice. Thank you very much to you, the listeners. We'll be back soon with another All Sport National podcast.